KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
That I tune to 94.9 FM. If you have not yet called 206-543-9595, well, why not? This is it. It's your time. I'm thinking about it. The mayor of the city of Seattle is sitting out there in the green room, as he does every month, coming in to share, answer your questions, talk about issues that face this great city and this great region. You know, it's a community. Participation is what this show is all about. And if you have ever asked a question of a civic leader or heard something on weekday that really sort of moved you to take action, we're asking you to put a little dollar value on it today. And I'm thinking about all the civic leaders and the civic thinkers, Steve, who have come into the studios to really help us together shape a vision for what we want the Puget Sound to be.
We have been privileged to talk to, and you have been privileged and able to put questions to governors over the last two decades, mayors over the last two decades, senators, this city council members from around the region. Mm-hmm. This forum is what helps create the community that we live in. This forum is what helps give all of us participatory opportunities.
Oh, here's some nice little music that will get you on your way to the phone at 206-543-9595. Doug pledged because he says KUOW is his favorite station. And I know that you've read this book, The Orchardist. Maybe, listeners, you've read that book, The Orchardist. And one of the things that I've been really impressed, it's set sort of in the Columbia Basin in Peshastan and Kashmir and Chelan. But one of the things in the turn of the 20th century is that idea of communities coming together to make things happen. And in the early 19th century, that was people coming together to pick apples or you know, work together to get the harvest in. Public radio is the 21st century version of that in an interesting way, Steve, that we depend on listeners like you who listen to weekday every day to chip in $120 a year and to sort of make this orchard bloom and bear fruit.
We always joke about how crazy that is, but it's not really so crazy. That's how communities have grown all through. I mean, you think about the settling of the West by the Europeans when they built their towns. That's what they did. They pulled together, and some of the first things that, what were the first things they did? Built churches, made sure they had some safety and security, built schools, got a newspaper. It was communities coming together saying, what are the things we need? One of the things we need is good sources of information. That's what KUOW is.
And, you know, as we see the proliferating venues and websites where you can find various tidbits, you realize that you can't trust every place there is to go, that a lot of people have points of view. They have agendas. Maybe they're even just trying to sell you a product. We raise the money, the $120 pledges, the $240 pledges, to pay for the program. We don't make the programming to make money. That's, you know, it's the reverse. It's the reverse. And so a couple times a year we come to you and say, you know, help tend the orchard, help build the font of information, help keep this public radio station strong. A phone number, wherever you're listening to our voices, toll-free is 1-866-677-5869. That's 1-866-NPR-KUOW.
You know, we are talking to you. A lot of folks have already pledged. They've shown their support. They understand what's going on. They said, all right, fine, I'm there. I will pledge $120 for this year's worth of 24 hours a day public radio. But we're talking to you, the person who hasn't pledged it, the person who's listening, gets something out of it, knows it's the right thing to do, but just you haven't found the time yet. You haven't been able to sort of get to that final realization that it is you we're talking to, hoping that you will now know it is you. You are the person we're talking to. You are part of the community that helps. You're on the edge of the barn raising, and somebody says, hey, come over here and grab this beam and push it up. That's you. 206-543-9595. 1-866-677-5869.
You know, you picked all that produce and you need help canning it for the winter. You call on your neighbors. You call on your community. We're calling on you, Odetta, and her kids, Owen, Jude, and Parker in Seattle, all made a pledge of support. It's a family. It's a community. It's so trite, but it's true. It takes a village to make public radio with your pledges of whatever you can afford. Maybe Owen, Jude, and Parker broke into their piggy banks, or maybe you know, have got all that loose change in the couch. Call 206-543-9595. Give according to your ability.
Here, I'm going to do something somewhat cruel. You know how we always talk about the kids in the back are learning, they're listening. You guys in the back right now, you gals in the back right now, being driven to school, just lean over to your mom and dad in the front seat and say, hey, they are talking about you guys. Are you guys members? And you, mom and dad, you're going to have to tell the truth. And I hope the truth is, well, we're calling right now because we haven't been a member yet. 206-543-9595, 1-866-677-5869. Don't make your kids bust out their penny bags. Not just yet. Give us a call, and thanks for your support.
Thank you. KUOW would like to acknowledge the businesses that have donated food and beverages throughout our pledge drive, especially Stumptown Coffee Roasters, Top Pot Donuts, and the Bagel Deli. Thank you for supporting KUOW.
Support for NPR comes from the Joyce Foundation, working to improve the quality of life in the Great Lakes region. Learn more at joycefdn.org. 46 degrees, cloudy with scattered showers in Seattle.
Support for KUOW comes from the Banking Services Creditors Rights and Bankruptcy Group at the law firm of Ryan, Swanson, and Cleveland.
When I've talked about poetry, I've really found that it was something that families passed down, and a lot of people have memories of doing a poem or sharing a story or something with a grandparent or aunt.
We were there to express that Seattle supports bringing the NBA back to Seattle, and that there's the political and public support for that, and I do think it was a very positive meeting.
That was Mike McGinn talking about what it was like to go to New York and meet with the NBA. Also, you heard Caroline Kennedy on poetry. Two things we'll be hearing this hour on weekday. Mike McGinn is the mayor of this fair city. He joins us again to talk about news of the issues of the city, news and issues of the city. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
You look very you look sharp. You look New York when I saw TV pictures of you there in New York.
Well, I figured
on the street.
I figured I better put it on, right?
Yeah,
I figured
yeah.
I was in New York. I needed to, you know, look the part.
So describe that meeting with the august leaders of basketball.
It was really interesting. So basically the NBA Board of Governors on 18th and 19th of this month have their regular meeting. And they requested a meeting on April 3rd in advance. They wanted to hear from both the Seattle proponents, the Seattle investor team, and the Sacramento team. So I met in the morning with Chris Hansenstein, Ballmer, Nordstrom's, as well as others associated with the proposal. And then in middle of the day, we were apparently, there was a subcommittee of NBA owners that had been meeting. They'd been briefed all morning, and we went in there. So it's a big conference room in a fancy old hotel in New York City, in Midtown. Tables arranged in a square around the room. The owners on one side, the commissioner and some of his staff on the other, and various other staff around the room as well. And then Chris Hansen, Steve Ballmer, the Nordstroms, Dow Constantine, myself, and as I said, some other folks associated with it, including a couple of the Maloof brothers as well, who were the Sacramento owners that were selling to Chris Hansen. And it was presentation lasted at least an hour plus, and then there was 15 or 20 minutes worth of questions. And basically, Chris was putting his best foot forward as to why it was a solid deal and why it was a solid proposal.
Did you learn anything new?
You know, it was fascinating to be in the meeting room. That's probably the part I'm describing it because I know a lot of the fans and people following it kind of want to know what was happening. I think the biggest thing I picked up new was that the Maloofs very much want to sell to Chris Hansen, and they made that very clear. I would also say I picked up an appreciation for the interest of Steve Ballmer and the Nordstroms that were there for investing in Seattle, and I was appreciative of that. It's good that we have people that want to invest in our city like that.
I mean, they talked about the value of being in the city as opposed to going to east side towns.
They weren't explicit about that, but the point is that they were very supportive of the effort, and it was clear that, you know, this is something that Steve Ballmer had been looking at off and on over the years, and he made the point that this was a great proposal and a good ownership team. So I appreciated that as well.
David Stern talked about the difficulty they would have in making a decision. He sort of graciously said that both sides had presented good arguments and good cases. You didn't get to go to the presentation by the Sacramento group, right?
That's right. I didn't see the proposal from Sacramento. But I understand where David Stern's coming from. And what I picked up from, and I watched his press conference remarks later, what I picked up from that is, you know, this is, he said something telling to me, which is, hey, I think the owners understand how complex an issue it is, and I'm not sure that they want or they need or want advice from me on this one, which I thought was interesting because it does speak to, it's the type of issue that they really have to dig in. And that's the other thing. That's what was really going on that day, was that this subset of owners, the committee, they are looking hard at the proposals. And this was really for them the first time. We're all steeped in it because mm-hmm. we've been talking about it locally, you know, about the arena proposal, about the about what type of investment the city's making and how we get paid back, you know, about the EIS, about I-91. We've been talking about it a lot. But for this ownership group, this was really the first time they were getting to dig into, you know, kind of the meat of it and get down into the details. And that was mainly what the day was about, was them getting presented with information and learning.
Mayor Mike McGinn is our guest. You know, there have been stories and reports about that the NBA is in a particularly interesting situation and that there are antitrust issues that might be on the table at some point because of the way the NBA and all professional sports is regulated. And there might be expansion ideas on the table as a way to accommodate both cities. What have you heard? Have you dealt with those issues, the issues of antitrust or expansion, which is, I know, not the proposal, but you know, what do we do next if the proposal doesn't make it?
Well, you know, I've said this a number of times. If it was up to mayors, the NBA would be expanding. And because there are a lot of cities that want to have an NBA team. But the fact is that the NBA is a business. The owners of the individual franchises make up the governance, you know, the governing board of the NBA. You know, people own franchises, and as such, the sale and relocation is subject to the approval of the league as a whole, which is the owners voting on it. So, you know, they're the ones making the rules. The issue of antitrust, it's not something I'm very familiar with. And so, you know, I suppose that would be the argument, is that that in some way the owners of the league are acting in restraint of trade.
Yeah. Tell me something. How does the thinking about the arena move forward, reworking it, getting it ready for a basketball team, as we're waiting for the NBA to make a decision? Is everything sort of slowed down in the meantime?
Well, no, we've pushed ahead to get the agreements in place to accommodate the Sonics if we had the Sonics this year. So, and we've been pushing fast to do that, you know, first, and, you know, there was a period of, we worked on the arena MOU and started the EIS and the permitting process, and then Chris Hansen and his team went out to get a team. Well, they came back with a team, and everybody started working in earnest on how would we accommodate someone at Key Arena. But it raises a good question, you know, and I think this is where you're going, which is, if the NBA does not make a decision on the 18th and 19th, what does that mean?
Yeah, is all the work for naught?
Well, I, you know, right now what we're doing is we're negotiating and entering into agreements. you know, at some point there's you know, a time at which people have to make a decision because schedules have to be made for the coming year. You know, investments would have to be, you know, the physical work of improvements would have to be underway at Key Arena. We have scheduling issues at Key Arena as well. We've been working to make sure that we hold open dates for an NBA season this year. So there's a lot of practical and pragmatic reasons why there has to be a decision at some point. And David Stern referenced that, too, in his remarks. He says, I don't know when that date is, but he acknowledges that that date exists, while also suggesting that, that it may take longer than the 18th or 19th.
Right, that's what we've heard, right? That it may slip.
So I think that, you know, he was speaking after a long day of hearing from both sides and learning more about it, you know, along with everybody else. So we'll just have to see what comes and we'll see what twists and turns are left in this as we head into the Board of Governors meeting. But I think everybody has a recognition at some point you have to make a decision. And I'm probably not any clearer than David Stern was at the end of the day that day as to what that point is where you really have to make a decision.
How much of an investment, dollar-wise, is this for the city in getting ready, and the county, in getting ready for a decision? Is there a sunk cost here?
Well, certainly there's the time and effort of staff people in working on it, but the upside of that is really big. So that's an appropriate investment of time and effort. The way that the Key Arena deal will work is we'll end up with more revenue out of Key Arena, and the bulk of the improvements are going to come out of...
If you get the team.
If we get the team, will come out of Chris Hansen and his group. So, you know, at some point we'll have to come to a decision where we have to make decisions about what we spend money on or not, but we're not there yet.
So you're still at the point where this seems like a good investment going forward, given the potential return. But at some point, as it gets closer to whatever deadlines you're facing.
Yeah, and again, the investments we've been making to date are time and effort to make arrangements.
Yeah, well, how much time do you think you... I mean, I don't imagine you expected this when you ran for mayor. How much time do you think you've put in this, you personally? You've had some good trips, I know.
You know, I don't get out much, too, for the record. I don't get out much. So that was a quick one. But yeah, that's true. I met with NBA Commissioner David Stern. I added him to a trip that I was making back east to go to the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and I also added a visit to the Office of Civil Rights on the same day, the next day in D.C. I had a little swing, East Coast swing there.
What was that about?
That was last year.
Oh, this was the last year, right? During
that was last year.
Oh, that's right.
So I've had two trips. I've gotten two trips to New York out of this, although it was fly in on the red eye, 2 days of work, and then fly out early the next morning. So I don't know how much time personally I put into it. It's my time. The real time and effort has been the time of our staff who've been working on it, and the council members and the county exec and the county council as well.
All right. We've
had really good people working on it, and so it's actually not been that big a drain on my time compared to other issues.
Now we'll talk about raising money for KUOW, and then we're going to come back with the mayor. We'll talk a little bit about I'd like to know a little bit about fireworks. You got the budget for Spokane Street done. You got the Seaball environmental analysis released. So, and we have some police surveillance camera issues. So we're going to get to all those in the remaining 9 minutes.
Go ahead.
Good luck on that. Marcy, we can get all that in, though, because we're going to be quick. We're going to say to you, 206-543-9595. We are a community. You're part of the community. You listen. You ask questions. You send emails. You are learning from this conversation. Help us pay for it.
543-9595 is the phone number. I feel like if you don't see that number when you close your eyes, maybe you've just tuned in, and I should tell you that this is our spring pledge drive. A couple times a year we come to you and we say, do you like this program? Well, why don't you volunteer to help pay for it? It's not a usual kind of formula. Usually you pay and then you get a product. But what we're doing is putting the product out there and saying, do you like it? It's kind of like when you go to a grocery store and they're passing a tray around and it's got really great samples and you think, those are really delicious. Where can I buy that? And I'm going to go down. You know, they do that at Trader Joe's. They do it all over the place. This is like that. You've sampled it. It's really delicious. You want more. And now, instead of making you pay for it, we say, well, gosh, the health of this product depends on your pledge of $120, 206-543-9595 or toll free 1-866-677-5869. And Steve, one of the things that I've been interested in the past week to see is so many people pledging and saying, I love Weekday with Steve Scher. I love hearing these conversations that I can't hear anywhere else. If you have thought that to yourself and haven't yet called, we need you to join with us and become a partner, become a producer of this program.
You are a producer of this program. You know when you write us and we have either missed something or that there are more topics to take in, we do. And we respond to your ideas. We need your ideas. We depend on your ideas in the same way that you depend on the information you get from the program. So two-way street needs to be paved. 206-543-9595.
Is that you're touching in on the mayor who's laughing there?
1-866-677-5869.
But you know, the city has that special group. You can call in a tip line, I think, still, and say Pothole Rangers.
684 Road.
See? They've got the number. And then these crews come out and fill in the pothole. So we're sort of doing this backwards. We're giving you the phone number and asking you to voluntarily add whatever the substance is that they put in the potholes. Black stuff, right? Black stuff.
Now you're digging deep. I just did it too.
206-543-9595. At the bottom line, this is a great program. You listen to it all the time. You learn from it. You laugh at it. You are inspired by it. And you become a better citizen because you're informed. And if you value that, Steve, you know the listeners are going to come through.
I do know that. It's an expectation you have, and it's an expectation that you will learn, that you will get information out, you'll get your emails answered, like one that we're going to read in a moment. And in return, there's an expectation we have, which says we need this service to keep going into the future. You need your children and even your grandchildren to know that this is a strong institution. So 206-543-9595, 1-866-677-5869. Thank you. All right, here, I got a little email for you. Oh, go ahead. Yes.
It's all you.
All right. I like the idea of the music, but I stepped on it, didn't I? Here's an email for you, sir, that goes right over to what we were just talking about resources, about ability, about what we put a priority to. Andrew Burbeck, who signs himself Citizen of Seattle and Taxpayer. I was hit by a car that ran a stop sign this past Saturday on the corner of 25th Northeast and Northeast 60th. I know the corner. I called 911. I called 911 and told them no one had been injured, but could they send a patrol officer to make a report? This is the point. The opportunity to ticket a violation, running a stop sign, etc., could have generated funds for the city. It would also have helped me in filing my insurance claim as the aggrieved party. The drivers of both vehicles waited 2.5 hours, called the police at least 5 times, asking for an update as to when an officer would be coming. Each time we were told police were very busy, officer would be dispatched when possible. After waiting the full 2.5 hours, we gave up, left the scene for home. What does it take to get an officer to a traffic accident?
Great question. I'm going to have to go back and ask some questions about this one. And if you would email me at mike.mcginn@seattle.gov and share this, or you can even forward the email.
I'm doing it.
Yeah, let me track this down, because particularly if there's a date or time to it. I mean, it is a resource issue for the city, and we do prioritize our 911 calls, you know, for obvious reasons. There's a priority list, but I'm not going to say whether or not that what happened here was right or wrong. We did go down a certain number of officers in the deepest part of our recession, less than other cities did, and we are working to hire back now. We went down by 20 officers through attrition, and we're working to hire them back now. Our budget improved, and we were able to do that in our last budget. But it's unquestionably true that more officers would be helpful in patrol and responding to 911 calls and giving them more free time to just not be responding to calls but be in the community interacting with people.
Hasn't there been a shift also when there's accidents with no injured parties that people are asked to pull to the side of the road, try to deal with it themselves, in part because there are issues of resources?
That's my understanding as well. So, you know, absent an injury, it's more difficult for the police to respond. I was listening to the discussion, and you know, as for the ticket and the revenue for the city, that is not, you know, what motivates us. But what does motivate us is safety. And we had the horrible accident up on 75th, not that far from where where this gentleman was. And, you know, I went out and walked the there was a memorial walk for the couple that was killed by the driver, and the whole community was out there, and they were really impressing upon me, and they've been organizing, and we've sent SDOT out there about how do we make our streets safer? How do we prevent these accidents?
Well, this is the crux, right? If you walk 75th, then you know that that's a tough street. There's geography. The hill rises. People are moving fast on that street because they see it as a thoroughfare. It's right in front of a school, and there's a traffic light sort of in the middle near the school, but it doesn't. It's not completely adequate.
We've done a couple of things. You know, we've added traffic speed cameras outside of schools, which you may know, and we're getting a lot of revenue off that, far more than we thought.
Or that you should, I imagine.
Well, we want it to go down, right? Yeah. We'd rather have people travel the speed limit than collect the money, and I've made a commitment that we're going to take that money and put it into improvements around schools. We've launched we're going to analyze the roads around all of our schools. We're going to add more cameras. We're going to put in more physical improvements. We'll have more enforcements. We also put money in our last year's budget for safe routes to schools. So that isn't necessarily the streets right next to the school, but, you know, the greenways or the other ways you can get to and from schools. 75th itself, our traffic engineer was up there meeting with the community. Our SDOT head was up there. And that's a street that we really need to improve. I've said this before on the show, I know. Fast speeds make a big difference. 40 mile an hour, if someone's hit by a car, there's an 80% fatality chance. At 30 miles an hour, it's 50%. Down at 20, it's only 5%. So engineering our roads and designing them for so that people will drive more slowly, which is what we've done on Nickerson, what we've done on 125th with the rechannelizations, are hugely important to make it safer.
But you get criticized for that. People say, look, you're slowing down traffic. You shouldn't be doing that. 75th is an example of four lanes, right? Basically,
it's not striped for four lanes,
but it's used for four lanes.
But it's effectively used for four lanes. So that is a good candidate for rechannelization. So we're going to have a process with the community. We'll sit down with the community. We'll take input, and we will take steps to calm speeds on that road and make it safer. Because if you calm the speeds, somebody who's doing 35 or 40 on a roadway is very unlikely, this is just experience, is very unlikely to stop for somebody waiting on a corner. They may not even be able to see that, pick them out and process them in sufficient time. Somebody who's moving, you know, near the speed limit, if they're 25 or 30, they're much more likely to be able to process that there's somebody there waiting. The other thing about the rechannelizations, which is why they're so important, and, you know, people see the bike lane there, and they go, oh, you know, there's the mayor, you know, he drove by and say, well, let's put in a bike lane on the street. And I still get letters like this. I never see a biker on 125th, I hear from people. And it is a steep street. But the point there is the bike lane is just an added component of the fact that what you've done is you've taken a four-lane road, and you made it one lane each way with a center turn lane. Speeds slow down. You only have one lane of traffic each way, which means that you don't have a multiple threat environment for somebody crossing the street. They can track one car coming one way, one car coming the other way, instead of two lanes. The cars don't swerve around each other in the same way. They don't have two lanes to swerve around. You know, car on the curb lane stops, following car swerves around, keeps going. And you have that center turn lane becomes a refuge for a pedestrian. In fact, sometimes you can build a refuge for a pedestrian.
Right. And you guys are doing that in some place.
Yeah.
Tell me something. Do you still argue that on 125th, for example, people are getting the same, relatively the same time in traffic than they did before?
Yeah. So we're gonna get the full report back. But the initial what I'm hearing from the department is that we're just as we've seen with all the others, we're seeing a reductions in speed, a reductions in accidents. And the throughput remains, you know, about the same. And it does take a little longer to get from end to end, but that's because people are driving slower.
All right, two in my time remaining, too quickly.
Sorry,
It's all right. It's good. Two quick emails. An email and a question. So here's an email. Here in our modest neighborhood in Highland Park, Kay White writes, we are very interested in hearing what the mayor is doing to push for the move of the Food Lifeline warehouse to the Duwamish property now illegally occupied by the Nicholsville's homeless camp. This involves the city selling a bit of property and eviction of the camp. What's happening there?
Well, you know, I think what we're seeing is that the governance model for the camp down there isn't working. We've had a lot of real issues down there. So it's and the property is Food Lifeline does want to purchase the property and use that as their distribution, where they send their distribution for all of the food banks in town. So we're, you know, we have been proposing to the council for some time rules that would set out a place for people to go, you know, whether it's a tent encampment with appropriate services and supported by the city. The council hasn't acted on that yet, but, you know, we're at the point where we got to make some decisions because I don't think the current situation is going to remain tenable.
Time frame?
We'll see.
That's a we'll see. But you want to get done.
We're at the point where we're going to have to start making some decisions. We've sent proposals down to council as to which way to go. They haven't responded to those. They've expressed interest in the Food Lifeline issue as well. So, you know, it turns out that these things sometimes take the council's participation as well.
All right. And now in 30 seconds, will there be public money for getting fireworks or will it all be private money that you're seeking?
You know, stay tuned on that one, too. We're going out there and we're reaching out to people and talking with people to see what we can do. It seems like fireworks on the 4th of July is a good idea.
Yeah.
So stay tuned and we'll give you a full answer to that when we figure it out.
All right. All right. I appreciate you letting us dance around the pledge drive. I appreciate
Thank you
coming in, sir.
Thank you.
Mike McGinn is the mayor of Seattle. I'm Steve Scherer. Marcy Silman's here.
I'm not the mayor of Seattle.
You are the mayor of the weekday pledge drive.
How's that? That's a perfect title. I love it. Yes, this is the spring pledge drive. And, Steve, we neglected to do a little bit of business when we started the show, which was to say that we need to raise $13,000.
What?
During this two-hour program. Caroline Kennedy is sitting in the green room. I just caught sight of her, and she's going to be in here to talk about poetry and other things. I don't know what you're planning to speak with her about, but that's all ahead. Right now, the little business at hand is calling and making a pledge. We've raised a really good number, $2,222. In the last 36 minutes, and we're looking to raise $3,333. I think that would be nice. So, you know, ones, add some $1,111 pledge. Or maybe you want to pledge whatever you can afford. Barbara in Seattle became a new member. She moved here from New York via Morocco, and Barbara's just getting settled into Seattle and wanted to do her part for public radio. And she says she found a level that she could pledge that she felt comfortable with. So whatever you can afford from each according to his or her ability, contribute to the station that brings you news from Seattle, brings you news from Washington, D.C., brings you news from Morocco and Egypt and Iraq and Iran.
I like it. I would like to be traveling the world and knowing how to say hello in each of those languages, which is what we're going to kick around with Carolyn Kennedy as well. But right now, we're kicking around with you the need to raise this money. We're here on a Monday. Marcy and I were here a week ago. And I know by now some of you are going, are they still? You're looking at your watches.
Really? It's not done yet?
But it only gets done when you join us, when you share it with us. Many, many thousands of people, many, many hundreds of people have called and pledged their support.
It's thousands, probably thousands.
Yeah, and thousands of dollars have been raised. But now we ask you, pledge at the $120 level, a sawbuck a month, $10 a month. And you can
sawbuck is $10?
Yeah, I'm going to be doing a many, many... Jason gave me a list of all the ways that we can say $10. So, yeah, okay. A Hamilton a month. A Hamilton a month to show your support to 24 hours of public radio.
I know we've broken that down by day because I find that an amazing thing. If you want to pay a sawbuck a month, that's 33 cents a day. I don't know what else you can get for 33 cents.
No.
These days, not much.
No. You'd have to probably pay for the sugar in your coffee. Would cost more than that. 206 543-9595. We would love to hear from you. We would love you to join us. We have to raise $13,000 by 11 o'clock. We have to raise an overall goal of $950,000. We only get there if you call. Lots of you have called, and thank you very much for that. But if you haven't called, you know, look into the computer screen, look at your telephone and say, oh, they're talking to me, and call 206-543-9595.
The thing about weekday, folks, if you've been listening for a while, maybe you're a longtime listener, let me tell you that you've been listening for 20 years, because that's how long this program has been on the radio. It's become an institution. You value the fact that coming up, you're going to hear about poetry. You just heard about Seattle City politics. You're going to hear about intestinal tracts, I believe,
yes,
in the next
ma'am.
Hour of the program.
Oh, yes.
There's the sound of the day. There's conversations about film. There's conversations about the environment. You learn little tidbit art. Always art. Art is the basis of life, in my mind. You hear about animals, vegetables, and minerals. You know, you can play 20 questions with what you learn on weekday. What we're doing is asking you to become a partner. It's really easy to do. It's going to take a couple minutes. That's it. 1-866-677-5869. Listeners to KQOW in Bellingham, to KUOW Tumwater, make that long-distance call on our dime, or you can pledge quietly and discreetly online at KUOW.org. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Support for KUOW comes from Seattle Opera, presenting La Voix Humaine with Suor Angelica. Poulenc and Puccini present two stories of women on the verge in this new-to-Seattle double bill. May 4th through 18th at McCaw Hall. Details at seattleopera.org.
46 degrees and cloudy in Seattle. Looks like clouds all day with a continuing chance of showers and a high of 56.
Support for KUOW comes from Little Brown & Company, publishers of Life After Life, Kate Atkinson's new novel about a woman who lives her life again and again until she gets it right.
Conversation with Caroline Kennedy mere seconds away. Stay tuned. If you haven't called yet with your pledge of support, please do so. 206-543-9595. Thanks.
Support for KUOW comes from Compost Days, celebrating the Northwest's accomplishments in composting food and yard waste. Now through April 15th. Compost purchasing information and details about The Big Dig are available online at compostdays.com.
Caroline Kennedy is a writer, attorney, editor of 10 best-selling books on American history, politics, and poetry. She walks in beauty, a woman's journey through poems, a family of poems, my favorite poetry for children, the best-loved poems of Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, 2013 honorary chair for National Library Week. It's good to see you again. Thank you for
talking to
us. Her latest is Poems to Learn by Heart. Also, talk of her becoming the ambassador of Japan. She's not really a saying very much. So all I say to you is konnichiwa.
Thank you.
I want you to tell me about Dream Yard Prep. Who are these guys?
Dream Yard Prep is a small arts-themed high school in the South Bronx. They also Dream Yard runs an after-school poetry program and arts programs for kids. The area that it's in is really the poorest congressional district in the country, and I got involved with them because it's really the best arts education program that I've seen in my work with the New York City public schools. And the kids that I saw reciting and performing their own poetry were so inspiring and passionate, and they were really using poetry as kind of a tool for social change. And so I asked three of them to help me choose poems for this book, and I've got one of their poems in here, which is really a pretty strong political poem and a group poem. And so it's one that's intended to show how poetry is being used today by younger kids and how dynamic and relevant it is, as well as the fact that it's become sort of a group activity. It's not just for older people who like to read alone in the, you know, fog and isolation.
Well, that's part of your point in this book, yes.
That is the point, right? Yeah. It's
are you reading?
Meant to be shared. What?
Are you reading? I forgot to ask you if you're reading from the book.
I'm only memorizing.
Oh, okay.
No,
right.
I am reading.
No,
am
let's
reading.
See. Let's see how good you are.
No. That was a way. There's a couple of short ones in here.
How about a little bit from page 58? How about a little bit from their poem? From that group poem you were talking about?
Oh, from the Dream Yard kids poem?
Yeah.
It's in a lot of the kids are Hispanic, and then a lot of them are African American in the school. So the poem has is a little bit bilingual, but I'll read an excerpt of it. Listen, let your ears breathe deeply. Take in our palabras. What we're about to say will save you. Listen. Do you hear that sound? That is the sound of a million voices rising. Our voices rise for Oscar Grant, for the Black Friday massacre, for my abuelo y abuela, for little girls and boys, for my mother, my uncle, for the aborted and the abandoned. We speak for the ones who have been silenced by fear, by choice, by ignorance, shame, death. Listen. Oscar Grant, my voice rises for the fight you never put up. Tell that burning steel you don't belong here beneath my flesh. Leave. Go. Don't come back. My skin is not a crime. Is it just that some things can't be changed? How many times can the red blood of black and brown men be spilled on gray cement and be called an accident? Listen.
That's
goes
from,
on from there.
That's from Voices Rising, Dreamyard Prep Slam Team. Now, you said in starting this book, you said that poems show us how to live. How does that poem show us how to live?
Well, I think what has happened for these kids is that writing poetry starting in middle school allowed them to find their voice and express a lot of the things that were happening that they didn't feel originally that they could talk about, whether it was issues at home of domestic violence or betrayal or loss, and also friendship and hope and love. And so I think that for some of these kids who feel pretty marginalized, poetry gives them a way to connect with others, to find their own voice, and then ultimately to find great strength in that and advocate for change.
Are you, when you are telling kids or asking kids if they would memorize poems, are you getting a response? Are kids standing up and saying, well, here's mine?
Kids are absolutely memorizing and performing and reciting incredibly lengthy poems that don't rhyme or anything as part of their own work. And so one of the things that I thought was also valuable was to try to connect them back to poems that were maybe older, more traditional, and get them interested in the way that other poets have solved these problems for thousands of years and written about the same topics but in a very different way. And sometimes the language is old-fashioned or complicated for kids today, but I think if you start small and you start with younger kids, they love the play of words and rhymes and funny poems and dynamic poems, and sharing the poems makes it something that kids can enjoy much more easily than just being told to sit down and read a chapter book.
I like the way you broke it up, and I was reading the kids through poems through a child's eyes, which I liked, and poems about families. But I like the nonsensical poems that you have in here.
Yeah, they're fun.
Which poems have you memorized, by the way?
Well, over the years, I've memorized a few of the some of the short ones, and I memorized as I got old, like the Robert Frost, The Secret. We dance in a circle.
Do you have that one? That's a great one.
Well, I know that one because it's only two lines.
That's why it's a good, that's why it's a good poem.
We dance in a circle and suppose the secret sits in the middle and knows.
That's a great poem.
And I memorized, you know, when I got more ambitious, I memorized The Charge of the Light Brigade because all my boy cousins were memorizing all these battle poems, and I thought I wanted to, you know, do it too.
Do you have favorite poets that are in this book?
Sure, of course. I mean, I could fill 10 books with favorite poets, but there are Naomi Shihab Nye is a poet who I've met who works a lot with kids and has also become a friend. Wallace Stevens is in here. My son gave me this poem, The Anecdote of the Jar by Wallace Stevens. Gwendolyn Brooks. So there's a lot of different types of poems and ages of poems in here, from Shel Silverstein to Archilochos and all kinds of stuff.
How come poetry for you? Why is poetry grab you the way it does?
Well, I think we need to do everything we can to surround kids today with words and language. We have a literacy crisis in this country and an education crisis, and too many kids are just turned off by reading. It's too hard or it's boring. And I think that poetry is really a way of hopefully giving them a way to enter into the world of ideas and words. And that world, I think, can really change their lives, our lives. It certainly has changed my life. I believe that this gift of reading and exploration was really one of the most precious gifts I received, and I feel like I think it really can be life-changing, and so I hope that poetry can give kids a way to start that.
How did poetry change your life?
Well, I think it didn't change it from maybe what it would have been with some radically different life, but it certainly has enriched it. And my mother used to make us pick out a poem for her for birthdays or Christmas or holidays. And so I think my brother and I really had this open-ended exploration of poetry, and we weren't intimidated by it. And so I think it led us all both to – he liked acting and plays and drama and public speaking, and I liked writing and reading. And so I think a lot of it comes back to the fact that it was integrated into our everyday life.
Wait, your mother would say, for one of my birthday presents, I want you to read me a poem or recite me a poem?
Yeah. Pick it out, copy it over, kind of learn it, memorize it if you could, but you didn't have to. And she had grown up doing that with her grandfather, and I think it was really something that families used to pass down. And that creates a special kind of memory. And so poetry can bring back memories, just like if you hear your favorite song on the radio from high school or something.
Yeah. What poems come back? Are there poems that are in this book, for example, that you also shared with your mom?
Yeah. There. Well, the first poems I shared that she taught me to recite for my father when I was about 3 or 4 are in the other book, and one of, they're called First Fig and Second Fig by Edna St. Vincent Millay, also short. My candle burns at both its ends, it will not last the night, but ah, my foes, and oh, my friends, it gives a lovely light. And I remember reciting it, and of course everybody clapped, and it was fantastic. And so I thought, okay, I like this. This is good.
Do you write poetry?
Not really.
It's not really mean. It means you write it, but
no,
you don't
means,
share it.
No, but I feel like I should. Everybody, all the women I know that are in their mid 50s are writing poetry, so I guess I better get on.
That's what we do when we turn in our 50s.
Yeah, we do. We do. If we're women and we're completely harassed by our grown children.
What other poems do you like from this book? That, I mean, I know you like them all, but which ones jump out for you, or ones have you been reading?
I like the Robert Frost poem, Dust of Snow, which is the way a crow shook down on me, the dust of snow from a hemlock tree changed my mood and saved a part of a day I had rued. And I think it's great because it's about, like, when you're just in a bad mood and then something unexpected happens and, you know, we should all be open to those moments and things can get better.
I like this May poem by John Updike in the book.
That's good.
I had never read it
before. Isn't it opening day here?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, it's a good poem for that. And I enjoy that you have sports poems in here and you have nonsensical poems in here. You're reminding people that poetry is not about cod liver oil.
Well, people are intimidated. Poetry has a terrible reputation, okay? I get that. But I think that that's unfortunate because it's really been around for thousands of years, and it speaks to the human heart.
I was, in doing research, I was bummed out to find that one of my favorite poems was not by Ogden Nash.
Oh, no.
A wonderful bird is a pelican. His bill can hold more than his belly can.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
He can take in his beak food enough for a week, but I'm damned if I see how the heli can. I thought that was by him, but in the tubes today, it said it was 1910. Dixon Lanier Merritt, editor of the Nashville paper, The Tennessean.
Huh. That's a great paper.
Because you have some Ogden Nash.
Yeah, I have some Ogden Nash in here, long and short. Custard the Dragon, I tried to memorize in third grade. I always liked that poem. And then more, you know, Langston Hughes.
I like also your extra credit. You had a poem in there that I tried to memorize. I never got it all the way through. In Xanadu did Kubla Khan, A Stately Pleasure Dome Decree.
Well, I had to put in the extra credit section because I knew kids growing up who would take on these incredible memorization challenges, and that's fun.
Well, in eighth grade, we had to memorize two poems. Mr. Temby made us do it. I thought, oh, man. But I still have them.
Right.
One of them is Ozymandias. I'm glad I memorized it.
Right.
Yeah, very had. And the other one was Lisa Grass by Carl Sandburg.
Very impressive.
Not Lisa Grass. Grass by Carl Sandburg. Your daughter translated a poem by Ovid,
mm-hmm.
Poem of Nature, that you put in the book.
Yeah.
What was that all about?
Well, I tried to continue this tradition with my own children, and I wasn't as successful as my mother because they are not as obedient as I was. They have contributed wonderful poems over the years, and she, in particular, my middle daughter, really enjoys it, and so she and I was also really like Latin, so she translated for Christmas for me this creation myth from Ovid, and I thought it was really beautiful, so I put it in the book. And of course her siblings can't stand the whole thing. They think it's just really
like
just
she was
obnoxious.
Just like,
yeah,
too much.
Too much.
It's a great
but it's
poem.
Fantastic.
She translated it
from Latin.
She
got really
great.
Good at Latin. She really liked Latin, and so then she gave me this for Christmas, and I thought it was really great.
Now our siblings just have to step up.
Yeah, exactly. They don't see it that way. They would rather just drag her down, as siblings want to do.
Yeah. Well, they could do it in Japanese if they get the chance. Do you have any words on that?
I don't have any words on that.
And do you also?
I wish I did, but I don't.
Do you also? Do you still think about politics? Would you like to do more politics?
You mean like elected
you
office?
You danced in the idea of the New York Senate race. Yeah, elected politics.
Yeah, well, I think right now I probably can make a bigger contribution in some other way than elected office. But
like this?
Like this, hopefully, and my other books. And, you know, I've been working pretty hard with this group, and I work in their poetry workshop. I work in their college application class. And I've done a lot of system-wide reform effort in New York with the public schools.
All right, I'll let you escape, but I have to read this poem because now we have to ask people for money.
Uh-huh.
Monday again at Pledge Drives on a roll. We ask and we plead and we beg and cajole. There are sighs and clicks of radios turning off. There are cries and snickers from listeners who scoff. Why should I listen? Why should I pay? It's for someone else. It's for another day. But deep in your heart, in the bright of the day, it's making you smart. And Pajoli holds sway.
Is that what that word is, Pajoli?
Pajoli, that was my spelling of Sylvia Pajoli.
Pajoli. Very nice. You didn't put in the phone number, though.
But you will. Carolyn Kennedy, thank you.
Thank you so much. They should be able to call in with a poem at the same time as their money.
There you go. A poem. You have put down a challenge, man.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's more fun. Your
That's right.
All right. So you call 543-9595. Caroline Kennedy has challenged you to put a poem there with that pledge. But also, we have 10 copies of Caroline Kennedy's book, Poems to Learn by Heart, for the first 10 people to call and pledge.
For a sawbuck a month.
Yes, $120 a year or a sawbuck a month. A Hamilton, the least appreciated president, according to producer Arvid Håkansson. I'm not sure if that's true. Yeah, right. You listen to Caroline Kennedy, just one of the many, many people who have come through the weekday studios over the years. A poem, you know, perhaps if she really does go to Japan, you want to be doing some haiku.
Very nice.
You can call us with a haiku pledge, or you pledge because you listen.
You are challenged now.
I listen, therefore I pledge. Sam in Seattle became a new member today, and you know, we're also wondering about you. Maybe you've been listening to this show for years and years, and you've thought, you know, somebody else is going to come up with the poetry. But it's you, my friend. It's you who make the words, produce the words that make our hearts soar, or whatever you said. Why should I listen? Why should I pay? It's for someone else. It's for another day. But deep in your heart, in the bright of the day, it's making you spark. And Pajoli holds
very nice
way.
You may quote me from now on.
I will. Steve Scher, published doggerel poet. Calvin Trillin, another poet who's come in. I talked to him. You've talked to him over the years. If you value conversations with thinkers, with people who maybe have a different perspective on the world, like you hear on weekday, we're asking you to, maybe you want a copy of Poems to Learn by Heart by Caroline Kennedy, or maybe you want to pledge $1,000 and become a member of our broadcaster circle. The amount, less important than taking that step forward. 1-866-677-5869, 206-543-9595. Steve, do people ask you always who's your favorite person you ever interviewed?
I can never really answer.
No, because you can't remember who you interviewed, right?
Well, and that so many people are great.
Everybody's
but yes,
great.
It's
yeah,
that.
There is that, too. But I do know that I'm seeing her beautiful face, the daughter of Ingrid Bergman.
Isabella Rossellini.
Was one of your favorite
that
interviews.
That was wonderful.
Yeah, it was a great interview.
She was talking about her insect sex book.
It's a little bit different take on people. We're here because the take on public radio funding has not changed. A little bit of money from the federal government, a little bit of money from, well, not much money at all anymore from the state of Washington. That's kind of been cut back. We get business support from all of our local partners in the area business community. But mostly our support comes from people like you who listen to KUOW FM Seattle, KUOW Tumwater, KQOW Bellingham, and digital HD services. However you listen, pick up the phone or pledge online at KUOW.org.
You know, though, you got me thinking about all the great poets that we've had the chance to see. And Elizabeth Austin is always talking to poets and working with poets. And some of the great ones that we've been able to privilege to interview, Kathleen Flanagan, Bell Hooks, W.S. Merwin, Billy Collins.
Seamus Heaney, one of my favorite weekday interviews years ago, Nobel Prize winning poet. Just amazing. They've come through here, and when they stop, they always tell us, wow, this is the only place where we've had an intelligent conversation.
We got to talk about poetry and read the poetry. And you know, we know, you and I know, and we all know, right? Poetry is marvelous.
I think poetry is what makes the world sing, or it allows the world's song to be sung. Let's put it that way.
Very nice.
It is. So
I like that.
It is. I mean, poetry taps into something so primal and so amazing. And we're asking you to be part of our poem, be part of what...
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.